אתם מאזינים ל-SBS בעברית.
There is a word that most Australian women will not hear during pregnancy. Not from their obstetrician, not from their midwife, not from the maternal child health nurse who weighs their baby at the six-week check. The word is matrescence, and it describes the most profound identity shift a woman can experience. Amy Taylor Cabaz first heard of the word matrescence 8 years ago, driving through Sydney. She had to pull over. She was crying so hard she couldn't see the road.
I was listening to this podcast and they said the word matrescence, and they said matrescence is like adolescence. It's this transformational period where your brain and your hormones and your physical body goes through these massive changes, but also you question who you are. You look at all your friendships and your relationships differently. The world views you differently. Mm. But unlike with adolescence, where we now build this amazing, you know, support system around teenagers so that they can go through it as little as bumpy as possible, we don't do that for mothers. And when I heard that word, it was such a profound acknowledgement of everything I'd been asking for 10 years and these thousands of mums who'd been saying the same thing to me, that I had to pull over on the side of the road because I was crying so much.
For Amy, that word changed everything. It gave language to a transformation that millions of Australian women endure in silence, sometimes at the cost of their mental health, their relationships, and their sense of self. This is the story of matrescence and why so many women are going through it alone. Matrescence was coined in the 1970s by medical anthropologist Dana Raphael at Columbia University. She'd seen breastfeeding rates plummet as antidepressant prescriptions soared, and she wanted to understand what Western society had lost. She came up with two solutions. One was the doula, a concept that eventually took off. The other was matrescence. That did not.
What she described it as is that when a woman becomes a mother is not that instant moment that she gives birth. There is a period of becoming. There's a period of transition, and that's what we need to study and support differently. But at the time, she was dismissed as some hippie breastfeeding advocate, and the idea was not taken up at all.
The word matrescence lay dormant for decades. Then, about 10 years ago, Dr. Aurelia Tan at Columbia University revived it. Her research lab was studying whether witnessing birth triggers the same spiritual awakening as witnessing death. What they found rewrote everything we thought we knew about the maternal brain.
We've only just started to research this about 5 years ago. Before that, the maternal brain hadn't even been studied. Like, one of the stats that I love to share is that there are more research papers into how juggling affects the brain than there is on how motherhood affects the brain.
The research is staggering. During pregnancy and postpartum, a woman's brain undergoes the most significant hormonal and structural changes of any life stage, including adolescence. Grey matter decreases in some areas, new neural pathways fire up. The brain literally rewires itself for caregiving.
That idea of baby brain, where we feel like we've all gone a little bit stupid and forgetful in those early months, is actually true in the sense that the brain does change shape and the grey matter decreases in some areas and in other parts sort of fires up more. But what they do now know is that the part that decreases, which makes us feel like we're going a little bit stupid for a moment, is actually a part that we no longer need. So it's been described to me that it's like a pencil is being sharpened.
But here's the critical difference between matrescence and adolescence. When a child hits puberty, society surrounds them with support systems, specialist doctors, counsellors, school programs, patient parents who remember their own teenage turmoil. When a woman becomes a mother, we hand her a baby, a pamphlet on breastfeeding, and send her home, often within 24 hours. Claire Andrews knows this system intimately. She's a maternal child nurse in Victoria.
In Victoria, you have maternal child health nurses who work with families from birth up until 4 years, but unfortunately across Australia it's a very fragmented system. That sort of service isn't available in New South Wales, for example, or in South Australia or Tasmania. It's all kind of, everything operates as a satellite, so there's no cohesion across Australia. And then on top of that, even in the maternal child health system in Victoria, which we're incredibly lucky to have a system in place, but it, in my opinion, is quite archaic in that we are very child focused and we don't, in my opinion, have enough of a focus on parents and on that transition into motherhood.
We are child focused, not mother focused. This distinction matters because matrescence isn't just about how to swaddle or when to introduce solids. It's about who the woman becomes when everything she knew about herself is suddenly up for grabs. Matrescence is also about the grief that nobody talks about. Amy Taylor Cabaz was 30 when she had her first baby. She was a journalist at the ABC, a foreign correspondent in the making, fiercely independent, professionally ambitious. She had never even held a baby before she held her own. The birth was traumatic and her daughter was unwell. And in the months that followed, something inside Amy cracked. Not broken, but fundamentally altered.
I adored this little girl more than I ever thought was possible. But something in me had kind of broken. The birth was a very, like I said, confronting and traumatic experience, and nobody was talking to me about it. There was no processing about that experience. For the first 4 months of her life, when we were in and out of hospital, nobody was checking in to see how I was coping with this. It was all about whether she was going to be okay.
What Amy experienced wasn't postnatal depression, though she'd later have to face that too. It was something more existential. The woman she had spent 30 years becoming, this successful journalist, the globetrotter, the woman who could work harder than anyone else, suddenly felt irrelevant.
I feel so differently about this career that I have spent 30 years dreaming about. I don't know if I want to do it anymore. Like, that was probably one of the scariest and most confronting thoughts, because for me that was just never going to change. And suddenly I didn't think I wanted to do that anymore, but I didn't know who I was without it.
This is the grief at the heart of matrescence, not the grief of a lost baby, but the grief of a lost self. And in a culture that tells women they can have it all, admitting motherhood has changed your priorities feels like a failure.
We really have attached ourselves to these other identities and these other achievements. You know, like, that's an achievement, is to do something at work. To just be at home and be a mum. So when we become a mother, our brain changes, our whole body changes, and we've got this cascade of hormones and this love that is just flowing through us, and suddenly we're like, oh my God, I'll give up everything to be a mother to this child. And that's, if you don't know about matrescence and you're not sort of walked through this process properly, it can feel really foreign to suddenly feel so different.
Amy calls the successful woman and the good mother two identities on a collision course, and the silence around that collision is deafening.
We also don't want to seem like a bad mum. We've got that double whammy of if a woman returns to work early after having a baby, everybody thinks that she's a bad mum. And if a woman leaves her job or stays home longer than expected, everyone thinks that, oh, well, she's just given up on her work. No matter what we choose, we're judged. And so, of course, we're silent. Of course we don't talk about it.
Claire Andrews sees that silence in her clinic every day, and she knows what it costs.
One in four or five women will experience postnatal depression or anxiety in that first 12-month period. One in 10 men will as well. And so I think it comes back to being the most important thing that we can do is really educate, really make sure that we've got some continuity of care going for these families, for every family, so that we can pick up on some of those early signs and do something about it, because early intervention is really important.
Considering complexities of matrescence, one key question arises. Is the Australian healthcare system well equipped to address maternal mental health? According to the professionals within it, the health system is fragmented, underfunded, and chronically child-centric. Lisa Retty-Wax is a midwife who provides private antenatal and postnatal care in Melbourne hospitals. She's watched the system erode over her career.
back in the day, women gave birth, they had their full 7 to 10 day stay in the hospital. And whilst I don't necessarily believe that the hospital is the place to be for everyone, I'm conscious of the fact that now in your public hospital, most women after a vaginal birth, a normal vaginal birth, their discharge is 6 to 24 hours after giving birth. After a more complicated birth or a cesarean, or where maybe the baby requires further observation, it might be 48 hours. Certainly not the 7 to 10 day stay.
6 to 24 hours. For a first-time mother who has never changed her nappy, never breastfed, never navigated the hormonal avalanche that begins when the placenta leaves her body. Claire Andrews knows that avalanche intimately. In 2020, she became a mother herself, and despite her professional training, despite knowing every warning sign, she fell through the cracks.
So I had my first baby in February 2020. I live an hour away from my family, and my husband grew up on a farm in northwest Victoria, and so we were 4 hours from his family. We live right on the regional metro border, and we were on the regional side and all of my family were on the metro side. So I literally was shut off from all of my supports for months on end, and it was really challenging. I had also had a baby that doesn't sleep, and I had a husband who's a paramedic, so he was going out day after day, very stressed about the idea of bringing back something that could make us unwell. It was a very uncertain time.
COVID-19 lockdown, a non-sleeping baby, a partner on the front line, the perfect storm. And Claire, the maternal child health nurse, stayed silent.
I had thoughts of harming her. I had thoughts of harming myself, but more from the perspective of, I remember one morning I thought to myself, oh, if I just hurt myself, I'll be able to go to hospital. And even though it'll be bright, like there'll be lights and sounds and everything, I will be able to rest and I won't have to do this for a little bit. To be frank, I didn't do anything about it because I was terrified that if I expressed exactly how I felt, that my baby would be taken away. And I already had my family taken away because of COVID lockdowns. And so it was a really, really, I stayed silent. I honestly stayed silent. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't even tell my husband about how bad it was.
The fear of having her baby removed kept Claire from seeking help. It's a fear that echoes through maternal mental health research, a system that punishes vulnerability rather than supporting it. Claire's depression eventually lifted, but not because of intervention, because her baby started sleeping.
Honestly, I went away when I didn't have to get up 5 or 6 times a night to feed her. Looking back as well, I was having auditory hallucinations, and it's only when I started sleeping that I realised that her baby monitor wasn't making the sounds that I thought it was, and that everything just felt clearer and the thoughts literally just went away when I could sleep 4, 5, 6 hours in a row. It was truly remarkable and it was very lucky.
It's quite remarkable and terrifying that a trained healthcare professional could slip so far into psychosis simply because the system had no net to catch her. Lisa Retty Wax sees the system's failures from both sides as a midwife and as a witness.
What can the government do better over the last 10 to 12 years? There's a pathway for midwives to become endorsed midwife, where they can prescribe medication, they can offer Medicare rebates to their care, and women can employ or take on their own private midwife, whether it's in their pregnancy, in their labour birth, or postnatal journey up to 8 weeks. And whilst the government definitely has provided this Medicare rebate, which helps, it doesn't really remunerate the midwife in a feasible or sustainable way. So most women will incur a gap. So I guess maybe potentially pushing the government for more of a rebate, then it might incentivize more midwives becoming endorsed and providing that full scope of their practice.
The endorsed midwife program is a start, but Lisa is clear it's just not enough. Not when women are sent home within hours of giving birth. Not when continuity of care, the same midwife through pregnancy, birth and postpartum, remains the exception rather than the rule.
So having that continuity, the evidence has it that continuity of care actually increases positive outcomes. So absolutely, it would be ideal to have the same midwife through a pregnancy, labour, birth and postnatally. To extend maybe those home visits would be amazing.
If the system is broken, what can women do? Claire Andrews is blunt. Start before the baby arrives.
No, I think really preparation is the key, and sort of starting this preparation for parenthood and kind of preparing for this transition into this seemingly new world when you're actually pregnant, rather than having to navigate a lot of these concepts when you are sleep deprived and you have a newborn baby in your arms and you're going, what is going on? You have 100 questions kind of rattling around your head on a minute by minute basis almost. And so starting that journey of like kind of understanding what to expect and just kind of putting small steps in place before you get to the point of having a baby in your arms is such a crucial element.
Build your village, find your community, ask for continuity of care and don't take no for an answer.
Above all else, having community and people around you to really combat this loneliness epidemic that really strikes a lot of mothers. 90% of mums will experience or feel like they are lonely in that parenthood journey. And we know how important it is for social connection. So aligning yourself with people in your village and building that village is a really important step that you can take.
And know the signs, not just of depression, but of the hormonal cascades that can trigger it. Claire speaks passionately about one of the most overlooked moments, when breastfeeding ends.
When someone stops breastfeeding, for example. So when they stop breastfeeding, you get that huge cascade of hormones again, and that actually is a time where you're more likely to experience a bout of postnatal depression or anxiety symptoms. This is a crucial time where we go, well, if we had the supports in place to really be able to hold people through this scenario and speak to people and what, like, kind of give them a heads up that this is something that can happen, that's a really important step. Instead of women and families in general going, what is going on? Why all of a sudden do I feel the way that I feel?
The baby blues at day four, when the milk comes in and the hormones crash, are well known. The weaning blues, far less so. As Claire argues, matrescence requires us to see the whole picture. A woman's body in constant hormonal flux, her identity in perpetual negotiation, her needs perpetually secondary to the child's.
סמנו לייק, שתפו והגיבו. עקבו אחרי SBS Hebrew בפייסבוק.